Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is 18th? I'm guessing, totally guessing.
It's the 21st.
Damn.
Hello.
3 days off. Hello, Ivy.
Hi, Ivy. Hello.
Hey, Ivy.
So, yes, 21st of July, 2021. This summer's actually going by pretty quickly to me. It's almost August.
I be telling y'all.
But it ain't Thanksgiving yet. We still got a little time. We still got a little time.
I'm a little behind on the Halloween costumes, so I can't lie.
Exactly. So, how's everybody doing today?
I'm good.
I'm good. We just had like a mini thunderstorm.
Yeah, yeah. It was clearing up now, but it was crazy for a while.
I think it's supposed to be off and on all day.
Yeah, it's supposed to be janky. It's supposed to be janky today.
65 degrees here.
It's supposed to cool off here. I mean, not that low, but it's supposed to be like in the nice 80s for the rest of the day.
Yeah, a little chilly. I'm good though. I got my caftan on.
Yeah, I see.
Ms. I Roper. Just decided I'm not gonna wear clothes anymore unless I absolutely have to.
Why bother?
I'm in a sheet of satin right now.
What are clothes?
I've worn jeans. I've worn jeans like twice since lockdown.
Yeah, I haven't worn jeans yet.
I've worn jeans also maybe a couple times, but they've been like my baggy jeans ripped up.
Yeah,
basically an equivalent
comfort.
I've been calling them hard pants. I've not been wearing hard pants.
I'm wearing boneless pants.
No hard
pants. Hard pants is trash. Before I forget, I want to mention real quick that I just saw it came across the across the Twitters that we talked last week about Rachel Nichols and Maria Taylor and that whole thing, and it came out that Maria Taylor left ESPN. So last night was her last show. And she has a deal over at NBC.
Yo, black women are heavy on that. I'm good, love, and joy.
Yes. You're not going to play me like that. I don't know who you think you're talking to, but.
I'm going to do like, there's a new, I can't think of his name, but there's this, I shouldn't call him new because I don't know how long he's been around. He's new to me. This Instagram comedian who kind of has a young Kevin Hart energy, but he does female voices. He'd be like, I don't know what you want to do. But it's like, that's how women are. They're really like, thanks for finally recognizing me, but actually.
Yeah, I'm going to go over here because I know my worth and my value.
Right.
Yeah, so this is unnamed sources, so we don't know how true this is, but she had, last year, she was apparently making less than $1 million. And then obviously she got a lot more responsibility, a lot more TV time, and did a great job, which is actually the first point. She did a great fucking job. And ESPN offered, again, this is unnamed source, so I don't know how true this is, but ESPN offered her a contract worth up to $5 million a year. And she said, like Nas said, love, I'm good, enjoy. I want Stephen A money, which is, I think, 8 to 10 a year. And ESPN was like, you wildin'. And she was like, nah, y'all wildin'. And went on to get a deal in NBC. I don't know. It hasn't been announced yet what she'll be doing there. But I think I read somewhere, don't quote me, that she will be on the Olympics broadcast.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. This is not the time to try to undercut or undersell, underpromote, underoffer a black woman.
No.
Who's visible. It's not the time. You're going to lose right now.
Does a great job.
Yeah. Maybe in 6 months you can be back on your bullshit. But right now,
yeah.
If there's a visible black woman, like you said, who's dope at what she does and who's respected, and the public fuckery is known.
Yeah.
She got options.
Good for her. First of all, I think that ESPN maybe played their hand wrong in a way that a lot of people do, which is they think that they're bidding against themselves.
Yep. Right.
And they don't think that there's someone else at the table, because that's usually used as a tactic to engage people in a way that makes them end up overbidding or overpaying for, mm-hmm. you know, someone. Mm-hmm. And I know that it sounds, you know, maybe the language, you know, might sound pretty gross, right? But you're paying, you're bidding for someone's services. That's ultimately what this is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And NBC came, NBC has, you know, long bread.
Unlimited funds.
You know, they have a wide array of sports as well. So, yeah, they came in the picture. Maybe they swooped down. And, you know, listen, do I think she was worth $8 to $10 million in terms of what Stephen A is? Maybe not. Do I think she's better than Stephen A? Sure. Mm. But, but Stephen A is also a move the needle jackass, right? Like, that's his job. His job is engagement and extraordinary.
He's a lightning rod.
That's what he does. And he has literally... That dude works from like 6 a.m. to like 6 p.m. He's on something, you know, somewhere. So there's a lot of responsibility. Long and short of it is this backfired on ESPN. They did a terrible job with how they handled this Rachel Nichols situation. They did a terrible job at how they addressed it. And good for her for finding a place that, you know, she feels comfortable in going. I hope that the bread is long. I would also like to say to her, the grass is not always greener. So if you get another recording about people talking shit with you over there, I hope you understand.
Yeah, don't trip.
That's a possibility.
That's the game.
My nigga, don't think, oh, you know, they're going to roll out the red carpet for you for sure. And they're going to give you everything that you're supposed to get. At first. And then at some point, they're going to say, you know, isn't your pay enough, right? Okay. Understand.
At some point, you're going to be in the bathroom stall and you're going to hear somebody walk in the bathroom talking about that fucking Maria.
That's all I'm saying. And if you're walking in it with that idea and understanding, go get your bread.
Exactly.
That's life changing money.
But I also think the difference between NBC and ESPN and ABC is like, ESPN now has been historically horrible at handling shit like this. Yes. Like, so it's also, I think it's also probably an idea of, even if this is where I want to be, in theory, I'm never going to be protected here. And I think NBC would have been a little more proactive in covering their ass. I'm just...
Mm-hmm. But also, she stays at ESPN, she wears this stain.
Exactly.
Everything is questioned about whatever promotion or whatever contract negotiation. And right. Listen,
and she's tied to Rachel Nichols, regardless, you know?
Listen, man, you got to strike when the iron is hot, okay? And the iron was fucking blazing, and she struck it, and God bless her, and I really wish her well. She'll be fine at NBC. You know, they got all the sports too. So, we'll see how it works out.
I just want to mention one last thing. It's interesting. So it's off my dome, off the top of my dome, I can name four black women who have come to ESPN, all who I think are really talented, who end up getting fucked off. Jemele Hill, Carrie Champion.
Was Jemele fucked off though?
Was Jemele fucked off? Well, a little bit.
Was she though?
Yes and no. I don't want to get into that. And I don't want to get into that because I want to move on. And Carrie
Champion. The toothpaste is out the tube, but we'll leave it alone. Right. But okay.
Carrie Champion and Josina Anderson. All these women were up and comers, black women at ESPN. And let's just say this. None of it ended well. It didn't end well for any of them. Except Maria.
And none of them looked good on ESPN.
Yeah. Another thing is, you know, and I know definitely none of y'all, I know Inca don't give a shit about this, but it's funny because Maria's gone and God bless you did her thing. And like Rachel got fucked off too. Like she hasn't been on TV now for about 2-3 weeks. She didn't do the finals at all.
Her check's still clearing.
Oh no, she's Gucci.
They offered her the sidelines and she was like, that wasn't good enough.
Yeah, I'm good. And the other girl, Malika Andrews, who did the sidelines was great. Anyway, let's move on. So peace to Maria Taylor. I need to hold something. I'll call you later on. I just wanted to mention this show, Dave. I want to mention a couple of shows. This show, Dave, which is, I mentioned it, I think, early last season. It's a show by starring this guy, Little Dicky, who's an actual white rapper. And he's basically has, it's basically kind of like a rap version of Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's out in L.A. and he's kind of moving around. It's all the rappers and producers. Like, the last episode had, like, Doja Cat was on it, Ray Shrem. Like, so, like, you're seeing all the artists and stuff like that kind of come in and out of the show. It's kind of like his journey into becoming this artist. It's a really good show. It's very funny. It's very subversive. Like, he's this quirky, just like Larry, he's this quirky Jewish guy.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I feel like I saw some people say that this season started, like, this season was kind of losing them.
I didn't. It's picked up. The first episode or two, I was like, what are they doing? It's picking up. It's definitely picked up much more now. But so, you know, if you got some time, watch it. You know, it's not like, you know, got to watch this, but it's a really good show.
I saw an episode. It's,
Okay.
If you like that sort of thing.
Other thing I watched, and I kind of wanted to get into some sociological shit about this, is I watched the show Never Have I Ever. Have you all watched that?
Of course.
Okay. I didn't know. I didn't know if you all watched it. So it's basically, it's the number one show on Netflix right now.
Yeah.
Season two just dropped. I was on it last season.
You didn't watch it last season?
I'm watching last seasons now. So I'm not into two.
Yeah,
yet.
I watched it over the weekend.
It's this show, Mindy Kaling does writes, and I know she produces, I think she writes as well.
I think she's one of the writers.
Because she's a writer. It's about this young girl, Dev, in, I guess it was like California-ish?
Yes, California.
Mm-hmm. And she's from an Indian, she's an Indian girl from an Indian family. Her father dies very young of a heart attack. Like, he looks like he's like 40 or something. And it's about kind of like her, you know, going through high school and dealing with, you know, her father dying. He comes back sometime as like a kind of ghostish type of character. And, you know, I think it's actually a pretty good show. But the interesting thing I find about it, and Mindy does this, it's very interesting to, like, why I feel like I'm watching a woman, Mindy Kaling, who doesn't like being Indian. she's East Indian. Because all the cat, even in her show that was on Fox for a while, mm-hmm. All the cat, she's always chasing whiteness. She always wants a white boyfriend. She wants to be with only white people. Like, it's always like she's chasing like approval of whiteness.
I think it's more like, I mean, if you think about Master of None, I think it's more of just painting what it's like to be the only Indian person in, you know, a bunch of, in a sea of fucking white people. Like, that's
Master of None, his best friend is a black girl.
Go ahead.
I think it's her trying to illustrate what it's like being first gen and kind of towing the line between the two cultures. Because, like, she's very Americanized. Her mom obviously is, but mm-hmm. is still desperately hanging on to her heritage and that sort of thing. She's trying to just be in high school.
Right, because one of the things that comes up in season one that comes back up in season two is that her mom wants to move back to Bangladesh. Is it Bangladesh? Where is it?
I don't know the exact city. It's India.
Yeah, but back
I don't know exact.
So India is probably Mumbai, because that's the capital.
I don't think it was Mumbai, because they come from an affluent family.
Okay.
And if I'm not, I mean, I know Mumbai has affluent areas, but I think it's also like a heavy slum area. But her mom is talking about, you know, and it's also like your first gen dad was like a lawyer or something. Mom is a doctor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're of a semi affluent family.
They live comfortable.
They live in the coast. Mm-hmm. And it is that struggle between, like Inka said, trying to be westernized, but also like your parents, you know, and it's, I don't feel like it's that different than when we see shows with like traditional Jewish parents where it's like, this is what you do for me, all we did for you, and we're gonna, you know, she's like, you're kissing a boy, your father's barely in his grave, he's like, you know, like that type of shit, right? Like, you're embarrassing the family, you're embarrassing our culture, oh my god, I'm gonna die, you're gonna miss me. It's a very that thing. And we do, you see similar things with, you know, the fish out of water black kid stories where the parents are, you know, trying to help hold, keep them attached to their roots and their pull with trying to be one of the cool kids and that other thing. So I don't think it's so much like She's chasing whiteness. I just think, like Inka said, it's, and like I said, I think it's the very same thing as with Master of None. It's like you grow up and it's very Western. And yeah, his best friend is black, but he don't date no black girls. Everybody else is white. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, or Indian. Nobody else is Indian. That's the point, really. Like, nobody else is Indian. So it's mm-hmm. really more like what's this balance look like? And, you know, but the other thing about it is I don't even think we're supposed to hold Dev up as any kind of example, right? Because she's trying to figure it out and she be fucking up and trying to find her way, and she's chasing the boy that doesn't necessarily give a fuck. And you know, it's very teenage, and I think we might have talked about this on here before. I have really enjoyed the resurgence of these teen series where they handle it with they give it like the weight it deserves, where you have adult situations but teen situations like coexisting, and it's not just like light fluffy, no offense to Disney, but it's not just like light fluffy Disney shit, but like it's
they smoke a joint and they have sex and
and they're like consequences struggling and all with that. Body image, and they're arguing with their but like it's real shit, but we're also like as an adult I can watch it and be engaged, you know, even though it's technically like a YA TV series. Netflix has had a bunch of these.
Yeah, they got Netflix, like whoever started that trend over there needs a big ass raise, because they definitely dug into like what was left hanging, you know, with the downfall, but just kind of how like Nickelodeon and some of these other networks have kind of gone away. And so, you know, they're bringing back iCarly, like they're doing all these things. Like,
but I mean, more like when the CW and the WB was,
true. I want to jump to that because I've only seen two episodes, so I'm very not versed. But have either of you watched the new Gossip Girl?
No, and I don't
know,
I'm on the fence about it. Gossip Girl lost me towards the end, and I was diehard Gossip Girl.
Oh yeah, it was a phenomenon when it first came out. That shit was crazy.
And so I've still not watched the actual. I know it was Dan, but I've still never actually watched like the end and the reveal and all of that stuff. I think I'll probably check it out just, you know, for nostalgia's sake and
yeah. Well, this one isn't, and I could. It's not a spoiler. This one isn't. They're not hiding who Gossip Girl is. Gossip Girl is the faculty.
Okay.
They have a young faculty. They're all obviously not students. Mm-hmm. They're not kids. They're young faculty, and they kind of knew about the Gossip Girl thing. And then the new students that they have on this Gossip Girl, in my opinion, are even meaner and harsher than the other ones. So they like, yo, we got to do something, because the students are not looking at, literally are saying to the teachers, yo, what are you wearing? Like, you're poor. Like they coming at them crazy. So the faculty is like, yo, we got to do something to check them, because they don't respect us on any level. And the other thing that they did this time is they made it way more diverse. And one of the meanest girls is a rich ass black girl. You know, so they flipped it some, but
I saw some BTS shots when they were filming, and I saw like the black girl and stuff like that. So I'll probably check it out out of curiosity. I don't know if I'll get as tapped into it. It'll be some binge shit if I do.
Yeah, you got some free time.
If we're talking about, I want to shout out a couple more shows that I watched at least one that I'm watching right now. I don't need to shout out.
Hold on, before you do that,
yes,
can we just say, can we stop giving Common acting jobs in general?
Common
didn't need him on Never Have I Ever.
Never Have I Ever, and he serves zero purpose. Like, I don't
know. He's a terrible actor.
That nigga's like parsley. It's like, let's just put some Common in here. There's no need for him. He does not add, like, the character he plays, it could have been anybody. It didn't need to be him. He doesn't bring anything to the story. Like, there's no reason to have him there. There was no reason to cut Common at check, like, at all. Except for the fact that they, like, drop in certain names in there. So, like, one thing about Never Have I Ever, for those who haven't watched, is that it's narrated by John McEnroe, because her and her dad were tennis fans. And he's, like, her hero in her head, even though I have problems with that, because McEnroe is such an asshole. But there's one episode where what's my boy's name? What's the comic? The 40-year-old virgin dude.
Judd Apatow?
No. Yeah, there's one. I think there's one episode where Apatow does something. It's not him. It's somebody else. I remember who it is. There's one other episode where
Inca, what's this moment brought you by?
There's one episode,
Gigi Hadid.
Who was it? Because he pops back in and she's like, you had an episode already. Beat it. Okay, anyway, Gigi Hadid narrates the episode, which I never would have thought that would have been interesting. But I'm like, okay. That's kind of interesting. I think they just dropped.
Gigi's probably a fan of the show, too.
Right. So they just,
was not as great as the first season, but it was still good.
It wasn't, but there's a setup for a third season based on the last scene. So I'm sure they like to do these things in threes. Because there's also was the Love Letter trilogy. They seem to be doing these YA things in threes.
To All the Boys.
Yeah, To All the Boys.
Yes, I Love You. Yeah.
And stuff like that. So they're doing these in threes. So I think there'll be one more. I'm also watching this joint on Netflix that I just want to shout out. I mean, it's good. It's not excellent, but I think it's really well done. And it's the concept is interesting. It's called Life Sentence. And it's a young woman. She's 23. She's had cancer since she was 15. After participating in this trial, her cancer is finally fully in remission. And now she has to, whereas usually for most of the stuff we watch, that's the end of the story. Now she has to deal with the fallout of everybody in her life and her assuming that she was going to die young for the past 8 years of her life. So like her parents have to sell the house because they're broke. She realizes that her high school diploma isn't real, like it's honorary. So she has no marketable skills to get a job. Her parents split up. Her siblings who are both older than her are like messed up in various ways because of the sacrifices they had to make and or because they were neglected. She married her husband like after she knew him for a couple of weeks because she thought she was dying in 6 months. And now they're like, well, they like each other, but they realize they don't know each other, right?
Wow.
Like, you know,
that
and like,
so interesting.
And like, he's from London. They met like randomly in Paris. He's from London. And like, immigration shows up at the door, like, we don't believe this, like that type of shit. So it's really interesting. And it's a comedy, but it's really interesting to watch, like, everybody having this discussion of, like, what does it look like when
you don't die?
When you don't die. And when everything around you has, like, she realizes, like, yo, y'all were lying to me about mad shit for so long. But now she's also, like, volunteering at the hospital on the oncology ward, and now there's a young girl who she's like, oh, now I get why they were lying to me, because like now she wants to like protect her, you know, do the same shit. So it's like, it's a really interesting concept that never really, and it's like how the rest of the family is now moving on, like, oh, we don't have to make everything about her anymore. Like her brother, that was his pickup line, is like, my sister has cancer, you know, like that type of shit. It's like, now we don't have to make everything about her anymore, what do we do now, type thing. Yeah, it's interesting.
That's super interesting. One kind of in that vein, another thing I've been watching is Atypical.
Yeah, how do you like it? I've been considering it, and my rule is usually like, if there's three seasons or more, I'll give it a shot, and I haven't tried it yet.
If you can get past not liking Michael Rapaport as a person,
right,
it's an excellent show.
Okay.
I'm not sure if the actor, the main character, actually does have autism or is neurodiverse. If he's not, he's doing an unbelievable job at just portraying it. But it goes into, I got super emotional, of course, because Ivy has autism, but there are things that you don't consider that the show does a brilliant job of kind of writing in, and you know, the people around him and kind of what it means for the family. So like, it's an incredible show. He loved life. I really enjoyed it. I watched all four seasons in the last like 2 weeks.
Oh, the last thing I want to shout out, there's been a horror trilogy.
You know, over your show.
I'm done. No, I'm done after this. There's been a horror trilogy because it's the perspectives that are different. There's been a horror trilogy that's dropped over the past 3 weeks, three horror movies. Is it Shadyside, Sunnyside, something like that? Those are the names of the two cities. But it's like Camp Fear or Fear Street. It's Fear Street. So
I've seen that up on
the first installment is like 1994. The second installment is like 1972. The third installment is like 1660 something. But it's worth watching how they connect like these time points in history to like this curse on this town. So like it's, and it's like, you know, good horror camp without being super slasher gory. So it's a little cross between supernatural and like, you know, old school horror camp, but I think it's worth a binge if you got nothing else to do. All right, I'm done.
All right, bruh.
Yo.
Talk about Bismarck.
Oh, I mean, well, RIP to Biz. He passed away, I think it was like maybe 3 days ago now.
Yeah, yeah.
Friday.
Friday.
Yeah.
And Biz was a legendary rapper and a legendary DJ and really an all-around fixture of hip-hop. I mean, mm-hmm. really one of the rare dudes that really kind of was good at all of the elements. I think Biz drew, he did the graffiti yeah. stuff.
He was, he's a real artist.
You know, a dancer. He had his own dance.
Yeah, his own Biz dance. Yeah,
you know, and there was, Biz had been sick for quite some time. There were reports of his death sort of earlier on, maybe about a month or so ago, that were just, you know, they were simply not true. I believe he was in hospice care at that point.
Yeah.
But, you know, a legendary figure. He was fairly young. I think Biz might have been
56,
about
57.
Yeah, I was getting 55. Yeah, 56, mm-hmm. 57. So, really, I would consider Biz, he's a part of what I technically call that the third generation of rap. Because you kind of had like that first generation, which is, you know, the real pioneers, the, you know, Herc and the Grandmaster Flash and
yeah.
you know, Grandmaster Caz and all those guys. And you have like that second wave of generation, which is like LL, Run DMC.
Run.
Between that 80, yeah, but like that 82 to like 85, 86.
Mm-hmm.
And then Biz and that third generation really usher in sort of the golden era of recorded music, which is like that 86, 87 to like 92, 93, before that Wu-Tang, Nas generation. So, you know, Biz, I would like to add, very underrated in the fresh category.
Correct.
Biz was always fresh. Mm-hmm. If you look at any of those pictures, he was always in the Flyest Dapper Dan shit.
Yeah.
He was always dripped in the Benetton. He always had the fly sneakers, the dookie robes, all of that.
His but he flipped it in his style. It was still like, he put it together in his way.
Yes. You know? So, and peace to his family, who obviously have been on a roller coaster. You know, dealing with someone in hospice and dealing with someone sort of going in and out, you know, almost, you know, you're really kind of watching them die fairly slowly.
Yeah.
And the people who loved him, man, I saw some people kind of buck at him being labeled as the crown, you know, the clown prince of hip hop.
He embraced that.
Yeah. And I think that, I think that we're, you know, we might be overthinking that as a slight a little bit. I think he enjoyed the fact that he was that guy. And, you know, he embraced all of it. He, you know, he took all, you know, Biz was always doing something, you know, exciting, or, you know, making a fun, light, you know, nothing ever heavy. So peace to him. A phenomenal DJ, really was one of the first people that made that transition from rapper to DJ. You always had DJs, but he was one of the first people to really transition to go from a rapper to a real live DJ. Like, niggas was coming to see and like Biz spinning, we coming.
Yeah.
Well, I just finished yesterday, last night, a piece on Biz for Mike. And I didn't want to do an obit. I actually wanted to do exactly what Sean just talked about, which was like highlight how much the things that people don't talk about where Biz is concerned. And the thing that's interesting about Biz is like, if you're in the business, you like Biz has been visible. He's been around. People understand his impact. Like what Sean was talking about in terms of him as a DJ, like Quest posted about him and was like, Biz taught me how to crate dig. He taught me you know, where to go to in fucking Japan to find these collectible things. Like, the reason I have so many collectibles is because I was trying to out-collect Biz on shit. He called me in the middle of the night, be like, do you know what this sample is? So he was like, he literally said, he said, Biz built me, right? And Quest is known as one of the, like, foremost music nerds out there. So obviously that Biz was a bigger music nerd than he was. But I think because, like, what was killing me, which is usual, is, like, everything you saw was, like, you know, Just a Friend rapper. And, like, culturally, if you want to talk about Biz's impact on hip-hop, Just a Friend was, like, at the bottom of the list. Like, Vapors and One
Nobody Beats the Biz.
Nobody Beats
the Biz. Make the music.
Like, there's over, like, 400 samples of those joints, right? Like, when you listen to those songs, you're like, oh, this is a Jay song. This is an NI song. This is fucking Real Love. This is blah, blah, blah. Like, you hear, you know, that on and, or 1-2, or 1-2, or Yes, Y'all, and da, da, da. Like, Biz is Cadence, and Biz and Kane as a partnership. People don't
talk. Yeah, because Kane, well, I think there's a couple of reasons for that. First, also, Just a Friend was a huge pop hit, and all the white people loved it, and they still play it now, and you hear it in commercials now. So, like you said, that's why he got tagged as that. Also, I didn't realize this till he passed away, and I went to look. I would try to listen to Going Off, which is that first album with
Nobody.
It's not up because it's probably sample purgatory, because every record is massive samples. So the younger people don't even have a chance to listen to that album to understand what he did and the impact that he made.
There's Biz's Best Beats or something like that.
Yeah, some shit, like some compilation thing.
Yeah, but it has his biggest joints on it. But
And then another thing that people have forgotten about is Biz was, I believe he was the first artist to get nailed for samples by the...
Well, he wasn't the first. He was the first one that wasn't able to knock off a settlement because
The
Daylight had just gone through the turtle shit, like, right before he got hit. Mm-hmm. So Biz's third album, I Need a Haircut, is not online at all.
Yeah.
Because he got sued for this song, Alone Again, which was basically kind of like another kind of version of
You Got What I Need. Mm-hmm.
And the original artist sued him and Warner. But the reason Biz got stuck was because, just for context, for those who don't know, like, that was still a really kind of wild west of sampling.
Yeah, it was early days.
Like, yeah, so what was happening was artists were starting to sue, but what usually happened was that the label would just put the shit out and then settle on the back end.
Yeah.
In this case, Warner had actually gone out for clearance and been denied.
Yeah.
But when they put it out anyway,
it got yanked out.
Yeah, the judge, like, came down heavy on them to the point where, like, he recommended that Biz face criminal charges on top of the copyright charge, because he was like, it's theft, it's fraud. So they pulled the album. They've never been able to put it back up.
Yes, never been up again.
And even though Biz put out another album in 93, that was when, like Sean said, like the shift of hip-hop, because Biz was party hip-hop. And he was like boom bap party hip-hop, because the other thing was, to Sean's point, even though Biz dropped, like, during the golden era, he was also part of the Juice Crew. So he was part of, like, foundational shit, right? And so by the time he came back out, you know, hip-hop was moving. But I think, you know, there's been a lot of, not necessarily from Black outlets, but people calling him a one-hit wonder. And my thing is, like, that's just such a misnomer.
He wasn't a one-hit wonder. They just said,
Hot 100 shit. But also, like, Biz did... Biz is on fucking Yo Gabba Gabba. The nigga's beatboxing in Men in Black. Like, he's, you know what I'm saying?
Biz is like, we found out later on when DMX passed away. Like,
that he was
Biz,
just always randomly
in places. He was a Forrest Gump. It was here. He was there. He said, oh, I met Biz in, you know, Okasaka.
Somebody said literally everybody in the world has met Biz Markie. Like, Biz would just be
everywhere. He'd be everywhere. I actually, and Shut Up, Inca. I actually worked with Biz.
you knew it was coming.
Yeah, when I went to Epic, he was signed. He was signed to Epic, and my boss at the time was like, Biz is gonna be your project. He wants to put this album out. Listen to the album, and like he had kind of gotten stuck in the singing thing because it was successful for him. And we'd have these long debates and I'd be like, Biz, like, I don't think anybody wants to hear a whole album of that. Like, let's do some hip hop shit too. Right. We'd have these long debates and yo, Jeff, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? But I actually, it was never contentious because he's not a contentious person. I really enjoyed those conversations, even though at the end I'd be mad frustrated because he wouldn't listen, but I enjoyed him and I enjoyed talking to him and I enjoyed that. You know, it was about a few months that we got with that. He ended up leaving the label, but I really enjoyed him. And whenever I would see him consequently, like it would always be just straight love and, you know, we'd laugh and goof. Like, you know, he's DJing a party here or something like that. But like he was like a really warm, loving dude. I never seen a dude like upset or angry at all. I mean, I'm sure he had his moments like everybody else, but like, you know, he was just a good dude and he was well loved across the board.
Definitely well loved. Oh, Jeff, yeah. Can you speak to, Sean touched on him being fresh, but I think this is for you to speak to the fact that Biz, aside from being one of the OG sneakerheads, he's also basically considered responsible for helping transition Nike into like a lifestyle brand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because back then, Adidas was the brand.
Right.
If I beat Adidas, Fila, Troop, and you know some of these other Pumas and whatever, Nike's was cool, but it wasn't really like, now, it definitely wasn't like now, you know what I'm saying? Like where Nike is the overwhelming dominant brand. At that time, there was a lot of different brands kind of buying for that spot. And Adidas probably was the biggest at that time because of running them. But Biz was definitely a Nike dude and he like was wearing, it was interesting because, you know, another group he was very like super close with that people don't kind of, I don't know if they know, him and the Beastie Boys.
Super. Yeah, he was on like almost every Beastie album.
Yeah, they love him. So I think he's taking trips to Japan with them because the Beastie Boys was doing that Japan shit early. The Beastie Boys are the first people to wear bait. Like they were doing that shit early. And he was taking trips with them and wearing the Nikes and everything and kind of and brought Nike into the fold. But he was a good dude, man. And I obviously like peace to his family and he'll be sorely missed. And, you know, I'm sad that he passed away the way he did, like after such a long drawn out illness. It was sad to see.
But I also want us to be careful. Like I see again the conversation of we need to talk about healthcare and hip hop and all this other stuff. Biz was not neglected. Biz was not left broke. Biz was not out here hurting. Biz has had diabetes for a decade. So it's like this isn't, even though I'm sure the road was taxing, I think we're
conflating. It wasn't like Black Rob. It wasn't.
Yeah,
like
we're that. Conflating a like.
Yeah.
What happens to our elder rappers conversation with just black men over a certain age?
It's just interesting that all the rappers that have died within the past year or so are all around the same age. So all it's 53, yeah. 55, 57, 49. It's other one I want to mention is Frankie from Keisha Cole's mom, Frankie.
Oh, Nephi.
No, well, yeah.
Frankie, which one's the mom? The mom's Frankie.
Frankie's the mother. Nephi's the sister. I mean, Frankie's Keisha's sister. Frankie's daughter. So she passed away. Apparently of an overdose. She was partying on her actual birthday. She turned 61 years old, and she's had, you know, drug issues, substance abuse issues for quite a long time, and she passed away a couple of days ago. And I'm bringing her up obviously just to say peace to Keisha Cole and her family, and just like looking backwards, like Keisha Cole's reality show, it was early reality, right? It was early era of reality. So Keisha Cole's reality show was like a reality show. Like they basically just holding cameras up. You know what I'm saying? Like
it was like Bobby and Whitney.
Yeah, it was just go. You know, and you uncovered the story. Keisha, I think Keisha maybe was on her second album. Maybe the second album come out at that point. So she had becoming this big star. And then, you know, she gets this reality show on BT and they put the cameras up and we didn't know at that time. We realized she comes from this like extremely dysfunctional family and from Oakland, a lot of drug abuse. Like they couldn't because I remember the early parts of the early episodes of the show, they were trying to find Frankie.
I remember that.
Yeah, they couldn't even find her because she was so deep into the streets. It'd be like, they literally be walking around with Keisha and a camera, and Keisha would run up on people on the street like, yo, you see my mother? You know, like it was, so Frankie really.
And then part of the plot line was like getting Frankie cleaned up.
Yes, yes,
you know, all that type of shit.
Yeah, and all that type of shit, exactly. So, a tragic ending to a very I guess, interesting, for lack of a better term, story, a life story. But, you know, peace to Keisha and her sisters and brothers. And that was the other thing on the show. Remember, we found out that Frankie had all these kids, and the kids didn't even know each other. And it's like, it was to come out now? Oh, my God. It would be the biggest show on television because of just the rawness of it. But again, peace to Keisha and Neffy and the rest of the siblings and other family members, and, you know, peace to Frankie for entertaining us, you know, for those yeah. times.
One more RIP in the last recording. Suzanne Douglas passed
from TAP.
And Parenthood, and legendary actress, always carried herself with a certain amount of grace.
Yeah, she was beautiful.
And just looking at the tributes up and down, like, my Instagram and celebrities posting on Twitter, it's like a huge loss, you know.
Just
seems so, I don't know,
vibrant. Always around. Kanye West is dropping. What y'all think? Look at bro face.
Listen, Kanye has his bullshit, and I'm probably gonna get heat for this, but the man makes excellent music.
Incredibly. But you know why the gospel album is good? Because he was only producing. He is not on it. Because you mean the Sunday sermon gospel album, not his Jesus gospel album, right?
I liked Jesus is King.
Oh, God, never mind.
A lot. I listened to it a lot. I know. I'm probably the last one that still listens to Kanye.
I got caught out there last night because I was watching the NBA Finals. Peace to Giannis and Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks for winning the championship. Giannis took that leap, but whatever. But they played a Beats commercial with Shikari Richardson. And I didn't know what the music was dope. I was like, yo, what is this? This is hot. And I found out it was one of the songs from the upcoming Kanye album.
Right.
And I was like, fuck, I kind of liked it. God damn it.
I know. I'm kind of the same way. Like, am I looking forward to it? Am I going to go buy the vinyl and shit? No, but
I'm going to
stream it, and I'm going to see if it's good. Like, I'm starving for the kind of music that I like.
Okay.
I'm tired of, like, vibey R&B. I'm tired of people not singing and producing anymore. I really want something that feels like, I don't know.
Feels good.
It feels good to me. And maybe Kanye, heartbreak and the bullshit.
I'm highly maybe this is what I've
been bro, what you got to, bro, what you got to say?
Fuck that nigga, man. Ain't nobody listening to that shit, man. I mean, you know, look, if you dig it, God bless. I'm not interested in nothing that nigga does. Like, nothing that nigga does. Word. Like,
I hear you.
You know, and like I've always said, we all have our line. We all have our line. There are people who will not watch the Cosby Show. There are people who will not watch the Floyd Mayweather fight. There were people who will not listen to the Dirty Rob. I get it.
Dirty Rob.
Like, I get it.
He still called a nigga Dirty Rob.
I mean, the fucking
niggas, you know, he's a filthy nigga, but I mean, I'm not interested. I'm just not interested in Kanye. Kanye was really, really great. And it's crazy. I mean, I still have his shit in my phone. So I'm not running the line of like, I'm like, nothing he made was like, I'm not doing none of that.
You
want to
stand still on the dance floor.
Yeah. Like I'm like, if some shit come on autoplay, I'm not going to like skip it. You know what I'm saying? But I'm also, you know, his antics and his tactics and his behavior has really sort of just taken over for me from his music. Like, it's just so overwhelming. It's so much all the time. The idea that that nigga is even going to be in the news cycle is already draining. That just the idea that this nigga is about to be, like, honestly, I see that shit on my timeline. I'm muting, I'm blocking, I'm good.
My thing is, I'm like, Swan, I have a line with artists, but with Kanye, if his music was still, I haven't listened to Kanye like heavily in a very long time. And I was never like a hard, hard, hard Ye fan. Like, I appreciated Ye. I like what he did. I saw his talent. I wasn't running out to grab, to cop yay shit, like, immediately, right? But for me, like, I think my beautiful dark twisted fantasy, even that, I was kind of on the fence about. But it's like, you know that line in Purple Rain where the club owner tells Prince, like, ain't nobody digging your music but yourself, like that type shit. Mm-hmm. Like, Kanye's on that line for me, because his antics and, to me, his decline musically are kind of the same thing. Like, even Life of Pablo has some moments, but then it's like, you could tell Kanye took it like three steps too far and fucked it up type shit, right?
Put too much in it.
Put too much on it.
And also continued editing it once it was out.
Yeah, like every...
The original version is nowhere.
Every streaming service has a different version of fucking Life of Pablo, which is a horrible consumer experience. But it's like I think of Father, I Stretch My Hands, and like, you know, it starts out so big and so warm and so uplifting, and it's a beautiful morning, you know, like all that. I just want to be liberated. And then this nigga starts talking about bleaching assholes. And it's like, where?
Because you know what? You know what he is? You know what he is? He's a master. Kanye understands Black people. And what I mean by that is the Jesus take. That's a very easy take for us. That's low-hanging fruit for us, okay? Nigga, if O.J. Simpson tomorrow was seen being baptized in the baptismal with Minister, you know, with Clarence and them,
yeah.
Niggas would be welcoming O.J. back with open
arms. I'm with you on, come on home.
You know, come on home. So we know that that's a tactic. We know having Shikari, having all of those things is him sort of scraping at trying to get back, you know what I'm saying? And trying to almost, you know, I wouldn't say buy back a piece of his soul. That might be a little harsh, but like, we know what this is.
You know what he's doing.
Ice always colder to that thing, and nobody's going to tell me different.
And this nigga been in Calabasas and fucking Utah too goddamn long. And that's the problem. Steve is a Jobs without a Wozniak. Like, you can't have the visionary without the balance. And without a Don C, without a somebody to keep him kind of together, it's like how Puff is off without Dre. You know what I'm saying? Like, there has to be somebody to
be like, nigga, you're wilding.
Yeah, like you would say, Jeffrey, he's untethered. Yeah. And that's my thing. Like, the music output isn't good enough anymore. Like, nigga, you scrapping albums and putting out something that you made in 72 hours. That's disrespectful to me, personally. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how long this album took, but I didn't know that's what happened with the joint with Jesus. And I'm like, how am I supposed to support that you would just like, let me just clobber this shit down right quick and throw it out? I don't appreciate that. I don't respect that. So that's my thing. So it's not just that Kanye's out here acting a fucking ass. It's that we defended Kanye for a very long time because of his genius. And that's one thing about us. Like, if you are still putting up good work, motherfuckers will still try to ride for you because they feel like you're worth it. But for me, his output is not worth
the drama.
It's not worth it anymore. And I'm also not his audience, frankly. Like, so I don't give a fuck. Like,
tell that nigga, go sell that. Go sell that shit at the MAGA hat rallies, nigga.
Yeah,
let them stream that shit.
That nigga's trying to get 22-year-old. That nigga, his core base is now like 22. I remember somebody on Twitter told me I was too old to understand Kanye. And I said, me and Kanye are the same fucking age. What are you talking about? Like, that, and that's the problem. Like, he's going for the
22-year-old.
Who are idiots. Not
all,
but most of y'all.
A lot of them.
Drag me. Wow.
A strong number of y'all.
Okay.
I wanted to also mention your man Jeff Bezos. I ended up watching his rocket launch yesterday.
It wasn't
what I thought it was going to be. Look at you sounding like Sean. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. Like, he went up. And he just came back down. I thought he was like going to go up.
Going into
like,
orbit or some shit?
Yeah, I thought he was going to orbit. He went up, touching
the edge of space.
Yeah, he went up mad high, but you could still see the rocket. It wasn't like it was out of sight. It went up mad high, straight up. And then a piece of the rocket, the bottom piece released.
Yeah.
He went up a little higher. And then we got to a certain thing. They had a timer on the screen, like showing how high he was going, how fast. When he got to a certain point, he just came directly back down.
To go into orbit, you prep for like a year plus.
No, I didn't know. Oh shit, okay. The nigga just went up, came back down. So he did the parachute. It worked perfectly. The parachute opened up, and they floated back down, hit the ground real easy, you know, flat. It was no problem. They opened the shit up. Nigga was happy.
But that's why me and Sean said last week it's a big dick contest. Like, niggas just want to be like,
yeah, because I thought it was some other shit. And so this is also showing me, like, now when I'm seeing, over the time, you see people say, oh, so they're going to be taking people up and people are signing up. I'm like, okay, I get it, because it's literally like a 5-minute trip. It was five. I don't even know if it was 5 minutes, bro. It was quick.
That shit is like the glorified version of the little slingshot. That that's all the niggas doing.
It's fucking rich amusement park shit.
I'm like, oh, this shit is like, oh, okay, cool, I guess. You know, but you know, whatever. He did it.
I want to talk about the interesting part.
Okay.
That he came down and immediately handed $100 million to Chef Andres.
Which I'm with.
$100 million to Van Jones.
Which I'm not with.
What is Van Jones going to do with the money?
It's supposed to be for him to get.
What did Van Jones do to earn $100 million?
Period.
I get Chef Andres. He earned that shit. He was literally risking his life around the world to feed people during the pandemic. Like, you know, in all parts of, you know, a rural parts, like, not, you know, people who really needed the help. Chef Andres, you got it, with blessings. What does Van do besides coon and fuck around on CNN for the last few months? What did he do?
This is the type of shit that Van's be doing that tap dancing for. He's the white people's black activist, right? And which is why Van is a kite. He goes whichever way the fucking wind
blows. Where the wind blows.
But it's supposed to be for Van to distribute to charitable cause. It's not supposed to be personal. It's supposed to be for him to use for charitable causes as he sees fit. Van ain't gonna do shit but funnel it into some other bullshit, restorative justice, something, whatever.
What's Roc Nation's cut?
That's my thought, right? Like, they also manage his philanthropic order.
Yeah, they get 20%.
Listen, I don't know how that works with charity, but I'm sure something going in there somewhere.
Somebody eating something.
It's very like Jeff Bezos deciding to give that amount of money to fucking Van. Like, I'm sure it was like, we have to pick a black person. Who we pick? Oh, Van.
Van Jones.
Yeah, or that might have been a call from Kim Kardashian. So who fucking knows? Like, it was the least surprising thing
to me,
because I was like, of course he gave it to Van. Like, of course he did, because I'm sure he didn't have like a committee who was actually doing like some research.
Because there's so many other black and brown people who are way more worthy. Yeah, organizations that are way more worthy.
You could get that shit to Gwen Ifill in the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. Like, you
so
know
many,
what I'm saying? Like,
so many people, yeah.
I mean, Sherilyn Ifill, you know who I mean.
Yeah, Sherilyn Ifill, yeah. I wanted to mention this COVID surge. So
variants,
the Delta variant.
Yo, we're on Lambda variant now. Did you see that this morning?
Oh, there's a new one.
Yep.
Yeah, in Texas.
And somebody said on Twitter, these niggas is chartering chapters and doing probates.
I didn't know there was a new. I didn't know there was a new line. So there's the Lambda variant. I didn't know about that one, but the Delta variant is going strong. And I think we mentioned this last week, but according to reports, pretty much everyone who's in the hospital for COVID now is unvaccinated.
Right.
And they're catching hell. People are dying, catching holy hell, because the Delta variant is stronger than the initial virus.
It's something crazy, like 25% of the new cases are kids.
Yes.
Yeah, because what's happening is that motherfuckers going unvaccinated and unmasked working around kids. And because kids under 12 cannot be vaccinated, kids are getting COVID.
Exactly. So this what I'm about to say is excluding the children, of course, because the Pop Life Blood of kids. But for me, I'm not feeling drumming up any sympathy for these people who was catching these L's. At this point, you had the chance. You wanted to follow Trump, look on Facebook, whatever you did to decide you didn't want to take the shot, plural, that's on you. But now if you're catching this L, what am I supposed to do? Feel bad for you? Like, right. You had
the even the conservatives are starting to rally.
Yeah, Fox, your man Hannity was on the other night.
Yeah, because they're finally starting to realize that your entire base dying is maybe not good for
yeah, that's not wavy.
Yeah.
That's not wavy. So I don't know. I'm just having an issue, like, with the sympathetic card. Like I said, you couldn't win and got the shot just like me and millions of other people did. You chose not to, and now you're paying the price for it. And it's just weird.
And like, all the niggas you follow have the shot. Everybody on Fox, your ridiculous president.
Yep.
All of them got vaccinated.
His kids.
All those Republicans.
All of them. Jim Jordan, Ted Cruz, all of them are fucking Mitch McConnell. All of them are vaccinated, yo.
I have zero sympathy, but I am elevating back up my level of caution and how I move. Also because, like, this whole thing in New York we have, and I mean, I think we talked about this on here that it was going to be a disaster. As soon as the CDC was like, well, we recommend that if you're vaccinated, you mask is optional. And it's like, how do you believe that, right? Yeah. So what that means is just that people aren't going to wear a mask if they have the choice. So I still, like, wear a mask when I go inside places and stuff like that, just because I don't want to be the person somebody looks at and says, well, she ain't got no mask on, so I'm gonna take
it. I'm not gonna rock one either. Yeah.
Yo, y'all know I'm rural and I go in Target with my mask on. It's like I'm a full alien.
Like, they're looking at you like, what's wrong? Yeah.
We came out of an appointment. She was like, oh, do we have to wear masks again? And I was like, no, I just do. Like, COVID is real. She was like, COVID is real. And I was like, no, my uncle died.
Yeah, bitch, COVID is real. Yeah.
It's real.
You know, well, it ain't real to you catch it. And that's been happening. There's some people who have been COVID deniers who are like catching it and dying on it. Or they're on these shows like, yo, it's real. Please listen. I didn't think it was real either. Hey, brother. All right. God bless you, man. But, you know, good luck with that breathing. I wanted to mention Sisters in Track.
Yeah. Sisters in Track is Brooklyn.
I knew he was gonna love part of it anyway because it's so Brooklyn.
Well,
it's so Bed-Stuy.
Peace to Boys and Girls High, the Pride and Joy of Bed-Stuy. That's the opening scene that they're working out on. So that track, that's my high school, small high school.
Mm-hmm.
Sisters in Track is a documentary that's on Netflix. I actually thought it was a series, but it's only a documentary.
It follows.
Three sisters who are running track on the AAU circuit.
Yep.
With a local coach and their mom who, you know, at the beginning of the show, it was pretty interesting because they really dive right into the sports, right? Mm-hmm. And so you kind of like warm up to this family and these kids, and then they hit you with, oh yeah, by the way, they're living in a shelter.
Yeah, they're homeless, basically.
Yes, they're basically homeless at this point. They win a couple medals. They get some press. I believe they won Sports Illustrated. And then they go do the round robin of press that normally occurs with that. And in doing so, I believe they go on Ellen's show or one of the daytime talk shows.
Yeah, I think it was Ellen.
Then Tyler Perry calls, as he does.
Yeah.
And is like, look, you guys don't worry about nothing. You'll have a place to stay. And gets them an apartment and pays their rent for 2 years, which is a fucking phenomenal head start. And it was really... And I just want to say that is the kind of thoughtfulness that a gift should require, right? Which is, it's easy to say, oh, you could just buy him a house, right? But that woman can't really maintain a house.
Exactly.
Right? Like, we have to get something to that she will be able to afford, that these children will not be uprooted. Like, sure, you can get them a place. Yeah, like, nobody wants to move their kids from Brooklyn to fucking Schenectady, right? Like, that's, no one wants to go, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's a hell of a move. So doing this is the kind of thoughtfulness that I think Charity is. And 2 years is a hell of a head start, right? It gives her the opportunity to find a new job, which she does.
Yes.
At that point, she was making minimum wage, and she gets this new job. She is able to save money because she, her biggest expense, which would be shelter, is, you know.
So she can stack.
Yes, she was able to stack. They're the two sisters are coaches. One of them, I believe, is a judge.
Yeah, she's a judge.
They don't specify what the other woman was, but they talk about the Colgate Games and how the Colgate Games really allows for these girls to get scholarship money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, really the goal is, and I also like this, the goal, she said, was that for these young women to go, young girls, are to go to school for free.
Yep.
That is the goal. The goal is for you to get a college scholarship, go to higher education, and not incur any costs. She said, if you're looking for Olympians, this is the wrong place for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that motto. There were a couple of things that they kind of do have some twists and turns. There was an older brother of theirs
who
was tragically killed. And it seemed not very long ago.
No, it seemed very recent.
Yeah, very recent. And, you know, they go through the sort of ups and downs of, you know,
adolescence.
Sisters. Yeah. You know, one girl is, you know, they're transitioning to high school. And what does that mean? And, you know, all of those sorts of things. So while it does have its moments, there were a couple of things in the doc that made me kind of, I don't want to say uneasy, maybe that's a strong word, but like no one addresses, even the coaches, you know, no one addresses the trauma that these young girls had been fighting through, right? Mm-hmm. Like at no point is it ever addressed. It is the elephant in the room.
Yep.
The mom doesn't talk about it, who I'm sure is probably still dealing with her own trauma, because I believe she was in an abusive relationship.
Yes, with yes, why with she dad. Was,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And losing the son, right? And no one addresses this. So the teenagers are, you know, they're going through their feisty, rebellious
acting out.
They're all of these sorts of little sort of micro small things that can kind of lead to bigger things that they don't really address. I mean, at the end of the day, the young women, they do get scholarships to go to high school. They go to Bishop Laughlin. I don't know how they turned out. They would probably be in their junior year. The younger ones. The older ones, because they went in, I think that was like 2017 or 18.
They're probably
going into their junior, senior year, and then they had the younger kids. So it was really, really good. But there were some moments where, as a documentary, it was a little scattered.
They never
really kind of like honed on one thing. And it actually probably, in my opinion, would have been better as a series.
Maybe six episodes. Yeah, to stretch it out.
Limited series.
Yeah, I agree. It was a couple of things. The stuff you mentioned and the other thing they meant that happened, that I was like, okay, like how did this happen and what was the real, you know, catalyst behind it and how did the mom feel, was when the oldest daughter went to live with the coach. And I was like, okay, cool, because the coach had an apartment, it looked like in Brooklyn, in a house somewhere outside the city.
Long Island.
Yeah, and again, that's cool because she got away. But I was just like, okay, how did that just happen? Is the mom's cool with this? Because the girl's still pretty young. Is she cool with this? Like, because that girl, the oldest daughter, started acting out a little bit. You know, she kind of had a couple of fights in school, and I kind of skimmed over how that process happened. So there was some narratives I felt like they maybe as a series, they could have dug deeper and explored more. They kind of skimmed over some stuff. But overall, the three girls, they're, you know, lovely girls. You know, they just going through adolescent shit, you know, but they're nice girls. And their mother's a nice woman who's had some tough times. But, like, they're not, like, terrible. They're not bad people. They just have been through some tough times. The coach is a nice person, too. But she's tough but loving. And, you know, so if you get a chance, just check it out. It was a pretty good doc. I want to talk about Popeyes real quick, because a report came out of either yesterday or the day before that Popeyes has spent 6 months stockpiling frozen chicken to launch their chicken nuggets.
I'm not really that mad. I was reading the story.
It says, you know, the chain is beginning tough because of the weather. The winter storms apparently fucked a lot of shit up, I guess, you know, like probably killed a lot of the chickens. There's a labor shortage. And there's been, because of the pandemic, it's all these kind of ripple effects that we keep talking about on the show, things that you don't kind of think about. But because of the pandemic and everybody staying home, there's been a huge increase in fried chicken and breaded chicken.
Right.
Because people are ordering all the Uber Eats and da-da-da. Seamless is like, oh, let's get, order some, you know, some wings from here and order some so-and-so from there. So there's been a huge increase in that, which is great, you know, but it cuts into, according to Popeyes, I'll bring Sean on in a minute, who has another take on this. According to Popeyes, it's cut into their, you know, their stock.
Yeah,
their stock. So they're rolling out these chicken nuggets that they're going to be like $3.99 for 8 pieces. So, you know, they want to kind of recreate the same energy as they did around the chicken sandwich. And I guess that was 18 or 19, 18?
18, 19.
But I just found the part that I found interesting was them saying there's a shortage of supply.
Yeah, they've been saying there's a chicken shortage, though. I've been hearing that for a minute.
And just like I told you all on the thread, when I was in Atlanta last week, I had worked out and I had gone to Smoothie King to get me a smoothie. And it was closed because they said they was out of shit. They didn't have enough fruit and stuff to even make soup. They were closed for the day and they were hoping they were going to get supplies the next day and so on. So there's like kind of these little things of like, they don't, and even when I was in Kentucky when we were gathering, you know, getting stuff together for our cookout, there were no wings at the Kroger. So we had to buy like legs and stuff like that. There was no wings available. So there's all these little things. It's not like panic time, but
the Smoothie King thing might be something a little bit different because nobody wants that job. We got a lot of like new managers in food service because, you know, we're putting up with a lot of bullshit, right?
Yeah.
Food service, people are being ridiculous. Everybody forgot how to be outside and how to treat people. Mm. So you want
to
pay
or
me
they
$12.50 an hour.
People to mistreat service people and they're just
yeah.
Yeah,
you want to pay me $12.50 an hour, and I'm the assistant manager, and I'm responsible for ordering the supplies. I'm gonna quit. So now you have a bunch of managers who are new who don't know how to allocate and order supplies and be prepared for whatever season. It's a ripple effect of a couple different things.
All I gotta say about Popeyes is if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. So I appreciate the fact that they are anticipating the nugget demand because I remember when stores were running out of the chicken for the chicken sandwich.
So, oh yeah, that's like, remember the chicken sandwich.
They're chaos. Like, you're not doing that shit again.
It was chaos. It was stores were shutting down, and it was fucking crazy.
As somebody who plans to be at the Popeyes by me when them chicken nuggets drop,
we're trying.
Sean's about to chime in. I got some thoughts.
I'm gonna let you go, but I just want to say one thing. Just for everybody's edification, the nuggets drop. It's like a record, right? It's like an album. The nuggets drop July 27th.
Look, that ain't but a few days away.
Yeah, it's next week. Go ahead, bro.
Well, I don't think there's no motherfucking berry shortage. Okay. I think so. What has happened is that, so remember early on in the COVID experience, you know, we had these super delays in deliveries.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And remember that, you know, maybe around April, shit was a little crazy. May, shit was a little crazy. Mm. By about August, things started to kind of peter out a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Like things started to come to you fairly normally. Right. But there were still companies that kept using COVID as an excuse as to why your fucking package is 3 weeks late. Okay, because they have built-in excuses. So they're using these justifications because, like Inka said, you don't have people that are begging for those jobs anymore. So it's easy to blame shit on the supply chain. It's easy to say that we're not, nobody else, no, the fucking Mexican lady don't have no problem getting berries. None. She got all the fruit, my nigga. She got all the fruit. On the corner,
my farmer's market is fucking stacked right now.
All the fruit, my nigga. There's no... So I'm not saying that there is no shortage of chicken. What I am saying is that I think that that's being overplayed. And I think that, you know, wings had long been expensive. Wings are very expensive. They're just an expensive thing. I mean, you have a high demand for it. We have a wing cult. There's literally a fucking chain of restaurants called Buffalo Wild Wings.
And Wingstop.
Right, nigga? That's all you're getting is wings, nigga. Yeah. Like, so I get it. There's clearly a demand. But, you know, I mean... We don't have that issue. Like you're going to go into Kroger's and you may not find wings in that Kroger's. To me, that is not a shortage. That means that Kroger's ran out of wings because it's fucking July and niggas is cooking out. So,
yeah, it was July 4th.
Also, those plants where the chicken is produced have, I think they need to justify the price raise on everything.
Yes.
And so maybe they're creating a bit more of an urgency around certain items to recoup that money that they lost from the last year.
And remember, they never, that was the thing. All of those plants, all of that shit was considered essential work. They never shut down. I think a lot of these franchises, and I can't really put my finger on it, and I'm no financial genius, but I think a lot of these franchises were open. They were still able to make money. They have been able to get PPP money, and they have been able to now, you know, not necessarily go out and hire people. They've been able to probably store some of that money, keep some of that money. Like I'm not buying this fire alarm that everyone has around a food shortage. Because guess what? I don't see. I don't want to be one of the people that, well, I don't see it. I don't think that there's a wide ranging food shortage. I've traveled throughout the U.S. No problem getting berries, my nigga. No problem getting them.
All right. Well, you know, just be safe and stack your strawberries and your pineapples. Shit might get real in the fall.
Niggas better start buying oatmeal and rice. Get you some motherfucking dry goods, nigga, some beans. Well,
they should have all the shit that they panicked by bought from last year with.
True.
Remember, yeah, no oatmeal anywhere?
No toilet paper. None of that
y'all
shit.
Still got that shit.
Yeah, y'all still got that shit. I want to mention a not funny story at all. That's I think it's been a bit underreported. Which is there's been huge riots in South Africa, the most violent riots they're saying since '94 when they overthrew apartheid. So the former president of the country, Jacob Zuma, he started serving a 15-year sentence for contempt of court, and that caused the black people in South Africa to be like, amongst other things, but that was like the pinnacle. To say enough, like y'all gonna put our president in jail, former president in jail for a year and a half because of contempt of court, when obviously there's other things you could do to, you know, confine him, you could do all kinds of things. And so it went crazy, and so they started tearing up shit in the country, especially in Joburg, and this caused what Trump was trying to do, which is basically the Afrikaners, which is the white people in South Africa, to go against the rioters. Mm-hmm. And they're like, literally, like, because the rioters, the rioters in South Africa didn't have guns and stuff. They, you know, have rocks or whatever. And so, like, the white people are like running up on these guys with guns and just gunning them down in the street, like riding by, like doing drive-bys, and they're filming it. They're not even, you know, being shameful about it. They're just like, pow, 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 pow. Like, you're not going to, you know, like, it would go to where they might be rioting in a store, where stores and stuff are. And they would just really start just shooting people, like, shooting them down. But, and this is, it is similar to America, and we know South Africa is a hugely, you know, based on a hugely racist system. And there's a lot of white South Africans who are very older ones, especially, that are still very unhappy about apartheid being gone. And this has been bubbling up under the surface. They've had black presidents, you know, starting with Mandela and other black presidents. And there's, it's been bubbling, bubbling, bubbling. And there's a kind of like a MAGA fraction in South Africa who's like, yo, we want shit the way it used to be.
Right.
And we're going to just, you know, do what we got to do. And they have no fear, just like here, of trouble. They're like, you know, the cops, the judges, whatever, they're on our side.
Right.
We can do what we want to do, and no, we don't really have to worry about retribution or whatever the word I'm looking for. It's like, a, you know, people...
Repercussions,
yes. People getting locked up and so on, so on, so on. And it's been bad. Like, you can go...
Yeah, it's apparently the most violent... It's apparently the most, like, violent period in a couple decades.
That's what I'm saying.
When you think of how all the violence that we hear coming out of South Africa, especially in recent years with uprisings, et cetera, mm-hmm. It's scary. Like, I saw this picture of a woman, like somebody had set an apartment building on fire. This woman had straight thrown her kid out the window, I guess in hopes of like saving her, really.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the kid was caught, but it was like, I didn't retweet it because it was just such a shocking.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of the images of people jumping from the Twin Towers.
9/11.
It was baby mid-fall, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, but it's apparently been crazy. And I will admit, I have not seen that much dialogue about it
on the
timeline. But I think in part, I think that's on purpose from the South African side. I think there's definitely like a bit of lockdown on messaging, posting, social media, etc.
It could definitely be. But I mean, if you go to YouTube and stuff, prepare yourself, because the violence is brutal. It's like, damn, like just shooting guys at point blank range, just blah blah blah. It's awful, man. It's kind of calmed down a bit, but you know, it's still telling it might kick back up again. Who's to say? And then there's this Cuban story, but I haven't really read up on this Cuban story about all the protests here.
It's so, in short, and I'll be honest, I don't have the full details either, but there are Cuban protests basically protesting the healthcare system. I should Google right quick, because Sean's on the phone and he would usually be the person who's bringing all these up. But the problem with the Cuban narrative in terms of what we're seeing here is that a lot of people are using Cuba on both sides, socialists and on the right, to argue for or against their point. So like, mm-hmm. you know, Cuba is a communist, you know, is a communist state, and their people are oppressed, and this is what it looks like, and people posting pictures of shanties and all that other stuff, some of which are not actually from Cuba. And then some people using it to say, see all y'all who want to argue that this is the system that you want, look at what it gets you. But then other people being like, this is America's fault because mm-hmm. of the embargo.
The embargo, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, if you've been to Cuba, both things are true. Like, it's really stark to see the difference between a place that readily has access to pretty much any resource. Like, for example, when you go to Cuba, ain't no, I'm gonna run to the bodega real quick. Ain't no Dwayne Reed.
Mm.
Ain't no, let me run in here and cop, so, except at the airport. Let me run here and cop some chips right fast. Mm. You know what I'm saying? There's not like corner stores and all of that stuff. In Havana, and we were in both Old Havana and New Havana. And just also, you know, people have kind of romanticized like the whole shit with the vintage cars. Mm. And all, but when you consider it, because of the fact that they don't have new cars.
They can't get new cars, exactly.
They can't get the new shit. So like, it makes for great pictures and it's sexy until you really think about
Yeah, there's a reason why there's not a 2005, because they can't have them get cars for like 60 years.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, so you have one side arguing like this is America's fault. You have the other side arguing, see, even they don't, you know, see, even the Cuban people, see how they're mistreated, and this is what a socialist system does, et cetera. So basically, it's protesting against deteriorating living conditions, lack of basic goods and services, but the catalyst was the poor health care around Corona. Mm-hmm. And it calling for the end to the communist regime, because that is the other part. Like, when you go to Cuba, it's just Castro every fucking where, and yep. Then it's been dead for years.
Yeah, now it was his brother until very recently.
It's bulletin board. Like, his picture is, this is what Trump wanted. I'm 100% bulletin boards. His picture is everywhere. Murals, building. Like, it's just Castro. Like, I don't think I really understood propaganda until I went to Cuba. Like, you understand it in theory, but that shit, you know what I'm saying, is like, it is like a controlled media state, whatever have you. So, you know, it's both things are true. America's fucked for cutting off resources to a country in such a way that has impacted their people so crazy. Mm-hmm. They were telling us like how much money they usually make and all this other stuff. And like, we could tipping them in American dollars. Like, they was chilling. Like,
yeah, they would be good for the week.
Yeah. Big time. Right. And, but also like it's a communist regime. So it's like, it's both things are true. So Sean, you're back. We were talking about,
the Cuban riots,
the protests in Cuba. Yeah. I know that you probably can speak to this more eloquently.
It's, I've been to Cuba. We kind of know. And like Nas said, there's a little bit of romanticism about Cuba. And so we think about this sort of socialist, communist experiment, and what's going on over there. We think about all of these, free education and free healthcare. Right. And all of these things that we don't necessarily have until we see the other side of that, which is that there are hundreds and thousands of people right now who currently families don't know where they are. That's what's happening over there. Mm-hmm. There are people who have been arrested and their families literally have no clue as to where they are. So uprisings are usually something that has occurred over the course of time, as obviously when Trump came into office, what it really also did, and I don't know if you spoke to this now, but it also really stopped physical cash from coming there.
Right, because they opened back up tourism and then they shut that shit back down.
Yes, exactly. So when they opened it up, what you had was you had those relatives from South Florida. You had those, the people coming in, and you're coming in there with massive amounts of cash.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm speaking from experience. You cannot
go to the ATM
because
there is no ATM. Said, they know, like, they know, send me a wire.
Bank of America.
Yeah. Ain't no ATM. Ain't no send me a wire. Ain't no
limit. None of that shit.
Okay?
No. Dude. We had to actually process a payment through a London branch of the hotel.
Wow.
In order for the, you know what I'm saying? Like, they were just, yeah.
Well, he's breaking up, but also,
I think it's like crazy, crazy shit. So,
you should break up.
What he's saying is that when you go to Cuba, it's not even like, oh, I'm just going to use my card, right? So it's like your credit card.
Cash only.
It's usually cash only. If you're going to pay for your credit card for anything, like he was kind of saying, like some hotels accept it, but you have to pay way in advance. Like, hey, no, I'm going to get there and put my card down. It's not that.
Yeah.
So you got to tabulate how much money are you going to spend? What do you want to buy? What do you want to get? And you got to have all that cash. Or like every night when we got back to the room, we were counting our cash, like, okay, we still got to go get Cohibas. We want to go to this place. We had a driver. We paid for our driver for the week. So we were paying him a day rate to have the same driver every day. Mm. Like, that type of shit. So every night we get to the hotel, like, all right, how much?
How much we got left?
Yeah. How much we got left? Because you forget, because shit is cheap, so you buy a little knickknacks, you doing shit, but then you remember, like, oh shit, when we were in the couch, we're out of cash, right? So it's like you tabulate, and that shit is it's damn near like a reality show challenge. It's like, how much cash do you need for a week? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it was an interesting trip, and I was gonna say, I think that the American angle is a very low hanging fruit angle. It's a very easy thing. You know, listen, I obviously we know America has their hands in a bunch of shit, right? And we know that we do a lot of dirty shit, but you know, not all of these countries are, you know, just absolved of any responsibility for the shit that goes on between their borders. Yeah. And I just think it's a little unfair that it just becomes this very heavy-handed way of saying, like, we're here not because of America, not just because of America's embargo. We're here because they fucking cannot feed themselves.
Yes.
Because there are lines outside the door. Like, we've watched this with the Soviet Union. We've watched this shit happen before.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? A big part of their economy also was dependent on the energy that was given to them from Venezuela. Venezuela is now on the ropes.
Yeah, they're
like, there's
fucked up.
An entire ecosystem that has allowed this to take place. And just saying that the American embargo is rooted in this shit is really not it. And I would also add, nigga, like, Russia was motherfucking 90 miles away. Like, let's not pretend, right? Like the hang up, like, Should this be squashed? Sure. I'm not saying that we're not overdoing it, but let's not act like that was like some light shit. Okay. Like,
yeah, it was almost like a fucking World War III.
World War III, nigga. Like, that shit was very real.
Yeah. So, I watched the Laz Alonso, who's a Cuban, who's Cuban. He came over here as a child. He, on his Instagram, he did a long piece about the protests and kind of broke everything down. Obviously, like, his family is involved in it. He talks about how, like y'all have been saying, like, supplies are basically zero. You get like a bag of rice a week or something crazy, and people are like struggling just to live. There's no medicine left over there now. Like, the country's really just being squeezed and squeezed and squeezed. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. Biden's mentioned that we stand with the Cuban people. I don't know if that's going to lead to him opening up again. I'm not sure. I mean, it might. I don't know. I'm going to be very interested to see if there will be another opening of the country, which will, you know, allow some things to change. Because, like you said, there'll be more cash and more resources able to flow more freely.
Yeah, places were starting to. And I think that's part of the reason why I'd be surprised if Trump shutting it down wasn't because of his own interest there. Places were starting to target Cuba to open
businesses and stuff.
No, like they were absolutely there. When we were there, there were cranes, baby. Cranes were moving.
They were getting ready.
They
I think we even talked about it on here. We were like, go to Cuba for a turn to Miami Beach.
Yeah. And then it went from that to zero. Just like that. That was my fault.
Okay, nigga.
I knew it had to be Jeffrey.
I was trying to ignore it, but you niggas blew me up. So
that shit played for like 6 seconds, nigga. All right, nigga.
I'm sorry. It was your nigga Meezy on Clubhouse going crazy. But he whatever. Anyway,
you're about to have all of us on the Clubhouse stage.
No, I wasn't doing that. I was definitely doing that. So anyway, we're gonna keep an eye on this story as well. Anything else you want to say before we go?
I do want to say this Haiti assassination is like it's unraveling and unraveling, and there is just more and more shit. There have been more arrests. They are now saying that the president literally was calling the state police from his fucking bedroom. Like, man, I'm about to die. Like you need, like, someone needs to help me and my family. Like, so. The timelines, what has been happening, they're saying that out of the 24 guards that is on his personal detail, like, they were in that house. So there was like this, like, we don't know where this is going to lead. They got, I believe there's 6 or 8 federal agents that are down there assisting them. And when I tell you, they are just uncovering fucking layer after layer after layer. They had one guy that was supposed to take over the presidency. People were balking at that. So now he stepped aside. So some other guy who was basically U.S. backed, is the president now. He's a doctor. It's like, how does that even, like, there is so much going so on much over bullshit. There right yeah. now. There's so much going on. I don't think we're ever, when we get the documentary in 2026, we'll probably know what happened.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're going to know exactly the ins and outs of what took place. We'll have an idea, but this shit is just reaching so deep, man.
Yeah. So I've been trying to keep up, and it's a lot. It shifts. It seems like every day is a new shift, you know? That's the Inca. You got some?
Speaking of documentaries and somebody being the Forrest Gump of a thing, I watched the Dick Gregory doc that's on Showtime right now. That nigga is Forrest Gump.
I still need to watch that.
Peace to him, man. He was.
Peace to him. What a life.
Dick had diet fucking, he was doing flat tummy tea before they
were Dick Gregory.
That's Dick Gregory.
Maybe some of that Dick Gregory.
They mentioned that in the doc. They literally show that clip. They show that clip to really let you know how ingrained he was in pop culture at the time.
Right.
Because he was really one of the first Make it at home mixes.
Yeah.
It talks about his life as a business owner, and you know, they don't really hold a lot of punches, which I enjoy. You know, Chris Rock was frying him up a little bit, which was hilarious. Chris Rock fried his ass, but it was very much what we all knew, which was sort of at the end, you know, Alzheimer's and dementia and those sorts of things sort of started to take over, and he had just gone. You know, there was already a light filter on him, so there was absolutely no filter.
Nothing.
Kevin Hart talk about him just cursing him out in the fucking hospital room.
Yeah,
with Nick Cannon there, like it was just crazy.
They always stick a mic in his face, even at that when he was going through that. And I'm like, why are y'all doing this, man? He doesn't make any sense. You take him up to Breakfast Club and let him rant and rave. I'm like, why are y'all doing this, man? He's not making any sense.
Because it's engagement. Yeah. And you know how niggas is. Yeah. You know how niggas is. Engagement over everything, right?
Yeah. So. Exactly. I'm gonna watch it.
I didn't know all that shit about him, like running across the country and. His hunger strike. There's a lot of history, who Dick Gregory is.
I only remember that because God bless my sister Lorraine had every fucking Jet magazine that ever came. Okay, nigga, like Lorraine bought the Jet like it was the Daily News. Nigga, if it was not in the Jet. It did not happen.
It didn't happen. You. It ain't real.
It didn't happen. Nigga. It didn't happen. And. The irony is one of the people that I don't know if it's the guy in the doc, but one of the really, really heavy people that he kind of took on tour and did the whole Bohemian diet thing. Like my sister grew up with one
really? Of those
guys. Like she knew him. So she always would keep tabs on that sort of stuff. And did Gregory,
Ivy.
And, you know, so it was always interesting.
Wow.
Are you okay? You can't.
We're having an Ivy emergency.
I think she's all right.
All right.
All right.
It got too quiet.
Ivy has no sense of danger, which is a whole other thing. But she was in the Papasan chair and she couldn't get out. So she was like tilting back and forth, and it was freaking her out. So,
okay, all right.
Sorry, I thought I was on mute. This kind of shit happens every 5 minutes when I'm recording.
It's all good. The people need to know.
Abby Park.
I got up, made a sandwich. I did 17 things while we were
on watching you up in the kitchen with your caftan on. We're gonna wrap it up. We'll see y'all next week. Y'all stay safe out here. Stay away from the variant. Get a vaccine if you ain't get one yet, because this fall, winter gonna be It's going to be pretty brutal.
Yo, that's what I wanted to mention.
People are fully going to be like, we need to know your vaccine. Because I have friends now who are like, not only do you have to be vaccinated, and shout out to you, Sean, y'all have an event coming up like this. Not only do you have to be vaccinated, we also need you to get tested.
Yeah,
legit.
What was he going to say, Inga? Did you see what?
So not only is there a weird summer flu outbreak among kids, but RSV is back. If you don't know about RSV, it is an extremely deadly respiratory virus. Really? That, like, it takes kids out. Like, damn. Out. And that's back. NICU beds are full. Like, kids' intensive care beds, it might be, like, 2 or 3 COVID patients, but there's, like, you know, 80% RSV patients. Ivy was vaccinated against it as a little tot because she already has respiratory issues. Wow. But like, even that is there's a weird summer outbreak of that. So
the earth is tired of you niggas.
Yeah, they trying to get rid of the weakest first. So like,
your niggas got to go. Vaccinated.
Keep your damn kids in the house because they got a shot out here, man.
Exactly. So we're gonna wrap it up on that note. We'll see y'all next week. Y'all be safe.
Later.
Bye. And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.